Is it Olivier? Rats. I've been calling him Oliver.
I thought it was Oliver too until right before I read that. I was like, oh, that's not Oliver.
Yeah, right. It's Olivier. There you go. There you go.
That was a last second catch by me.
Welcome to Season 1, Episode 9 of the Swift Over Coffee podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Sean Allen.
And I think most of us are now winding down for Christmas or Festivus or whatever sort of celebration you have. What are you up to, Sean?
I've been winding down for quite a while, actually. I've been on this like East Coast kind of trip since, you know, late November.
So you're like, you're fully unwound by now, is what you're saying.
I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get wound back up to, like, I forgot how to code, I think. I don't know. So I did this long Thanksgiving / Christmas holiday break. So yeah, when I get back in January, I'm really going to have to, you know, kick it into high gear and remember how to, you know, use Xcode, I guess.
Well, it's going to be a big year. And I think later on in the podcast, we'll talk about plans for next year, because there's lots happening, right?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'll give a sneak peek now, but I got accepted for my first talk at iOSCon in Woo-hoo! London in March of 2019. So I think somebody else might be speaking there too.
Yeah, well, it's my home turf, right? So I'll be there as well. And I think we know we can probably sneak in a joint live Swift Over Coffee podcast at the event, which would be awesome, I think.
Oh yeah, I plan on being there for like a whole week, so I have tons of content ideas I want to do, so stay tuned for that. Okay, ready for the news?
I am.
As always, let's kick off the show with the news, and we're going to start with kind of an update from last episode where we talked about SE0235 adding the result type to the standard library, and the big update there is that it has been accepted with a slight modification, and that is in the name of the two cases. And a quick recap, if you can't remember what the result type is, it's basically a way to handle errors, and it's an enum that has two cases, a successful case and a failure case, to which you would act accordingly. When it was being reviewed, though, those cases were called value and error, and after some debate, the proposal was accepted with just new case names called success and failure.
And even better, they've added a patch recently that means it won't break existing result code. You know, keep in mind that folks have been using result types since Swift 1.0, so there's multiple result types out there in their own user code, and when Swift 5 comes out with the same thing called result, it might cause breakage, but fortunately it won't. They've put in some work to make sure that the use result type will shadow the Swift one, meaning that the Swift one will be hidden away. And they can use swift.result if they want to have the exact Swift one or use their own one. So it's got a really smooth migration path to the new result type, which is super nice.
Moving on to the next topic, we're going to stick with the Swift language here and more proposals, and that is SE0239, add codable conformance to range types. And this is actually just finishing up review on December 20th, so we should be hearing a verdict pretty soon. And as you may be familiar, codable was introduced in Swift 4, and it had a list of, you know, basic types that conform to it, such as int, string, date, array, you know, among others. This proposal is really just expanding that list of types that conform to codable to include range types, you know, things like range, close ranged, partial range from, partial range through, partial range up to.
Yeah, so this is obviously just really rounding out the corners of codable. I'm not sure how many folks would need codable ranges, but you know, why not? It's not very hard to do. It just encodes lower bound and upper bound, ultimately. I still think ranges are a bit messy in Swift. You know, trying to make a custom range subscripts for your types requires you to have from, through, and up to for each type to really be complete, which is a bit confusing. But it's just making it slightly better, so it might help a few people.
Moving on, let's talk about the App Store in that, you know, you may be able to gift in-app purchases now coming soon. As of now, you can gift a paid app to somebody, but you couldn't do that with in-app purchases. And this was discovered actually in kind of like the changelog of the app review guidelines. So before the change, it specifically said apps should not directly or indirectly enable gifting of in-app purchase content features, you know, etc. But after the change, it specifically says apps may enable gifting of items that are eligible for in-app purchases to others. But, you know, such gifts may only be refunded to the original purchaser, and, you know, and you can't exchange it. So there are some limitations. Now, we think this is coming soon because no direction has been given, you know, to us developers quite yet. But it's still good to know that this is very likely coming. So, you know, be on the lookout for that.
Honestly, it's been coming for a long time. I remember Apple giving us a sneak on the sly preview saying it's coming really soon, maybe 4 years ago.
I was going to say, how long ago was that?
It's been coming for a long time. Of course, there are all sorts of complications behind this, particularly around subscriptions, because of course subscriptions are handled by the developer. They have to track expiration dates and renewals and so forth. There's all sorts of complexities. So this is an inch forward. It's slightly more public now, but it might be a while before we see anything good actually out of it.
All right, and finally, we've had a couple pretty interesting articles, from Erica Sadoun and Olivier Halligan around Swift 5's string interpolation with some examples. And now, I haven't really had a chance to dive into these in great detail just yet. So, Paul, what did you think of them?
So, obviously, I write lots of things about new Swift versions, like what's new in Swift 4, 4.2, 5.0, and so forth. I take a very active interest in what's changing in Swift and why. And I looked at the string interpolation work. And it's very interesting. I couldn't necessarily see a directly applicable reason to use it. But these articles from Erica and Olivier have been really helpful. They've talked about, interpolating attributed strings, interpolating dates, interpolating custom structs and similar. And it's interesting. I wouldn't necessarily do it myself, but it's providing a use case that at least makes you think, okay, I can see why that's valuable to somebody else. So I need to look into some more, I think, start noodling around, start trying things out, get a feel for how it would work in my own code. But I think it's going to be good once we find sort of the killer app for it.
Now, this is normally where we would do our picks for the episode, but because it is the last Swift Overcopy episode of 2018, we're going to do something a little bit different, a little special episode here. So we're going to actually discuss the importance of, reflection and goal setting, because it doesn't matter if you've been developing for 20 plus years or you're just starting out, like we're all still growing and getting better, like, or at least that's what we should be striving to do. So, and reflecting, looking back on how far you've come this year, I just think is a very valuable thing.
So this is one of the few chances every year I get to use my classical education. I can tell you that Janus is the Roman god of beginnings and endings. And he's depicted with one face looking forward and one looking back. And it's where we get the word January from, new year, new beginnings. And I think it is helpful at this time of the year to say, okay, this is where I have come from. This is what I've worked on. This is how successful or maybe unsuccessful it was. And next year, here's what I plan to do.
Yeah, Paul. Well, that expensive classical education you got, I think it's gotten its use. You got about 10 seconds of podcast content out of it.
Yeah.
So I think that's money well spent, if you ask me. So with all that said, looking back, looking forward, I think it's great. Let's actually use us as an example. So Paul, let's talk about some of the things you've accomplished this year, and then maybe some of your goals for next year.
Okay. So this year, I think it won't surprise anyone to learn my goal for this year was to speak at conferences, to really hone and practice the art of presentations, because it is a skill like anything else. So I spoke at 17 events and several more meetups across 15 different countries. And it was very, very valuable for me to work on that as a skill, to actually look back and say, this thing, good talk, this bit suffered. This bit here, good talk, this bit suffered, and so forth, and refine it, an iterative process, just like I have with coding, I guess. But of course, I wrote articles too. I tried to add up the articles I've written, and it's a heck of a lot. It's more than I realized. It is, I believe, to the best of my knowledge, 486 articles in the last year about Swift, plus 3 books.
Real quick, there's only 365 days in a year, right?
But yeah.
Math is kind of not adding up. I mean, I know you didn't. So that's more than one article a day. That's kind of crazy.
It is. It's more sort of batches. So I do nothing for a week and then do 10. I wasn't doing nothing, but I was doing books or other stuff. And I released a Swift in 60 seconds thing in January, which is now 99 articles plus videos in there. There's all sorts going on there.
So, Paul, I have to ask, with all that traveling and conference, like we mentioned earlier, I got my first conference coming up, and I'm actually kind of dreading the travel aspect of it. It's a 10-hour flight from San Francisco to London. So I'm pretty much a horrible traveler. I need a few days to prepare, and then when I return, I need like a week just to like recalibrate. So how did you stay this productive, constantly traveling? Because there's, 12 months in a year, you went to 15 different countries. That's once a month, international traveling.
Yeah, I think when folks ask me what I do, and I say, oh yes, I travel around speaking at conferences, they think, wow, it sounds super glamorous. It really isn't.
It doesn't sound attractive at all to me, actually.
No, yeah, you can kind of feel it. So you're like, you know, it's 4 a.m. You're up in the middle of the night to get a taxi to the airport or something. You know, it's very, very tiring. But what I have found is that, you know, air travel is a stressful experience. You know, whether it's going through security or leaving your baggage or arriving at the airport early or whatever, plus the flight itself. And stressful environments really wake me up. They keep me focused and keep me moving versus sitting at home comfortable in a nice, you know, chair, the glass of wine or something. I'm much more productive when I am traveling because I'm in some random airport lounge somewhere with a coffee. So it has actually, I think, helped me in some respects. And as well as the books, you know, I released 6 open source projects plus source code with 3 books. I started the Hacking with Swift translation project and this is important, I filed 48 radars with Apple, almost one every week.
How many of those were successful? Because as we all know, it's kind of a meme in the iOS developer space, you know, file a radar. So how many of those actually were successful?
If by successful you mean fixed, I think maybe 3. quite a few have been closed as duplicates. Some were closed, just closed. We're not even fixing these things. The vast majority are sitting there open. And fair enough, I expect at DubDub19, we'll see some movement there. But it's pretty slim. But looking beyond just, you know, myself and, you know, radar and so forth, I've also worked hard this year, I think, or I feel that, to push my outreach to make a more diverse, inclusive community. You know, I donated $35,000 of books to folks who needed it, plus free Swift books to further 1,400 Apple employees, almost 1,500 Apple employees now. I sponsored diversity tickets at 3 events. I'm really grateful to iOS Dev UK, Nextdoor, and DevFest Baltics for letting me do that because it's worked for them too. Plus, I had Skype calls with 24 folks from underrepresented groups in our community offering advice and support to help them do more with their careers.
Yeah, that is awesome to hear. And it's something I really want to get involved with soon as well, because I do. I just think there's so many brilliant minds out there. You know, you just don't have the means to get into iOS development, because let's be honest, these MacBooks we're looking at right now and these expensive latest iPhones, you know, they're not the most accessible to the less fortunate. All right. So, Paul, that's what you did this year. Awesome achievements. What do you got teed up for 2019?
So folks seem to think that for me 2019 has been a really relaxing year compared to 2018. I think it's going to be quite the opposite. My plan is to do significantly fewer conferences and instead direct my energies to writing more free Swift content. So I expect to publish a new Swift article 5 days a week until DubDub19 happens, plus run a weekly live stream called Swift on Sundays. And the last episode of the podcast I mentioned, I'm going to start taking on some mentoring partners to help build, again, a more inclusive community.
Wait a minute. A live stream? Paul, what are you doing? Get off my turf. That's my stuff. No, I'm just kidding. I think that'll be great. I know live coding is brutal. I did try that on a live stream one time. It didn't go well. So best of luck to you. But I do think that'll be, you know, immensely valuable to those watching, you know, you building these apps.
You know, I was never going to go near YouTube, but then you wrote a book, you see, so you fired the first shot here, Sean.
I mean, an eye for an eye, I guess, you know.
But also, I want to work on my monthly page views for the site. You know, my target for next year is to double my page views monthly, and I get about 620,000 page views a month right now. So we're talking past 1.2 million page views a month this time next year, which is possible. Possible. We'll see. Anyway, enough about me. 2018 for you, Sean, what have you been up to?
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of break this down into 2 different careers, because that's kind of what I feel like I have. I have like my real job and then my content creation YouTuber job. So in the real job, I started off the year contracting, and then I tried to go to like a major company probably around April. And I had a very short list of companies. It was like Apple, Coinbase. At the time, Facebook was on the list. And it was either like those or go to a small startup. So I made it pretty deep into the Apple and Coinbase interview process, and you know, it didn't work out, obviously.
I think you probably dodged a bullet with Facebook, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that is why you noticed I kind of said, and it was on the list at the time, right? I said, I kind of threw that in there because no offense to anybody that works at Facebook, but it's not on the list now. But anyway, what I learned during that time is the experience I got, you know, doing those interviews is super valuable. And I also learned that contracting isn't really for me. That whole, you know, everybody has those dreams of like working from home and how amazing it would be. It was great for like 6 months, but after a year and a half of it, you know, just staring at yourself for three straight days kind of really got old. And I really wanted to be in that team environment and going into an office every day. So I did learn that's not for me. However, another learning experience was it was the most transformative chapter of my career, because I got to work on, you know, six, seven, eight different, you know, vastly different apps during a short period of time. So my learning and growth as a developer just was really accelerated by that chapter. However, I just probably won't revisit that chapter.
I think it's super important that you're able to take these lessons learned from those experiences. It's too easy, I think, to go to a great interview and think you've done well, but then not get the job and just feel discouraged. But actually, yes, fine, it's sad, but you can get so much from that. You know, if you realize the value of that missed interview experience, you know, you learn a huge amount about your weak spots, for example.
So that pretty much wraps up my 2018 for my normal job. So let's talk about what I did as a content creator, my YouTube career. And so as a content creator, I started 2018 with a little over 10,000 subscribers on YouTube. And now I'm just at about 33,000. So about a triple up. So some pretty nice gains there. I created over 115 videos helping people learn Swift this year. So I'm pretty proud of that. And then one thing, probably the biggest thing, not the biggest thing, but probably the most impactful thing I've done is I launched the show Swift News, which many of you probably know me from. And that started to give me a little bit of a name in the iOS space.
Are you the most prolific Swift YouTuber? I mean, you probably are. And it seems like a really great way to reach out to folks.
Depends on your definition of prolific, right? If a lot of people judge it based on subscribers, you know, overall subscribers, and there are plenty of channels that have more subscribers than me. I do think I am the most active and the most part of the community. So yeah, like I said, Swift News was big for me because that, you know, led me to meet many, many developers in the space. So that's what led me to meet Paul. Paul came to my city. I don't own it, but San Francisco for DubDub. We got to hang out for a day. We filmed an episode of Swift News, did a live stream. So that's kind of where the friendship began. And then, you know, a few months later, he reached out to me and said, hey, you want to do this podcast? And here we are, you know, as we speak. So that was pretty cool starting this podcast, as well as my own podcast. Started that too. And I wrote my very, very first book, which just released, you know, about a week or two ago. So pretty pumped about that. And then, like we alluded to before, I got my first speaking gig in London for March of 2019. So that's a lot.
It is a lot. And it's going to be super awesome, too. You know, we're already talking to the organizers to try and get this live Swift Over Coffee podcast at the event. Maybe we can do a Swift News London recording. You can come to my town. I live in Bath in the southwest. Hang out here, record here in my amazing studio.
Yeah, we'll have to do another live stream because I feel like that was a pretty big hit last time we did that. I think a lot of people like that. This is why I wanted to share all this stuff. It wasn't a, hey, everybody, look what we did, you know, because this was my idea to kind of do this review. And I didn't want it to seem too, you know, braggy, but it just teaches you so much. And the main thing it taught me was that, looking back, the main lesson I learned was just keep showing up. It's just little by little, you know, each and every day. And then you look back at the year and a lot of big things can happen. I use this analogy with my YouTube business. You know, I'm building a wall and it's just brick by brick every single day. Like every video I do, it's another brick in the wall. Every podcast I do, another brick in the wall. And when you're just putting one brick a day, doesn't look like much, but you know, 365 days later, you look back and it's like, holy crap, that's a pretty big wall I just built, you know?
Also, I think growing a beard really helps. I mean, come on, it can't be a coincidence, right?
That is the wall I was talking about.
It's a beard of steel.
Yeah. It is kind of funny how many comments I get on the beard. It's like people know the beard more than they know me almost sometimes. So it's kind of funny.
You can never shave again.
No. So again, that wraps up 2018, looking back on it. So let's talk about 2019 going forward. So for my career, I've said this many times on other videos, podcasts, is that I feel like I'm missing a very important chapter of my career. You know, a lot of my development career has been building apps from zero to start. So, you know, launch, like the very first MVP. What I don't have experience in is that big company, you know, large team that has millions and millions of users. Because that is a completely different development environment than working with one or two developers, you know, building an app. So looking to get a job at a big company in the second half of 2019. So if anybody out there is looking for a Swift developer, let me know at SeanAllen_dev on Twitter if you want to reach out there. And then finally, thanks to Paul here, I want to get testing into my developer tool belt. You know, we've kind of joked about it on previous episodes during my contracting career and at the small startup. Haven't done too much testing, so that is going to be a focus in early 2019.
I don't think it's going to be easy going from no tests to taking testing seriously. But maybe just start by writing a test the next time a bug report comes in. That way your test verifies the problem's been fixed while also stopping it from regressing in the future.
So let's kind of run through the content real quick, just some quick hitter goals. I do want to reach 100K subs, even though it is just a vanity metric. I'm really going hard on my personal podcast, iOS Dev Discussions. Got a whole lot planned there. And then we mentioned that book earlier. I'm going to write part two of that book because part one was how I became an iOS developer. And then part two is going to kind of be, you know, the independent contracting, starting the YouTube channel, and then hopefully getting a job at that big major company. That'll kind of be the climax of the book. But that hasn't happened yet. So I need that to play out before I can write the book. And then in about April and May, I want to launch my very, very first course. It's going to be based on the take-home test interview, because that is a increasingly more popular way to interview for a job. They give you a take-home test. So we're going to kind of run through that real quick.
Is book part two going to be a free update for readers, or are you going to make me send you some more money?
You're going to have to send me more money.
Damn it.
Needless to say, the second part will again be a single-digit dollar book as well. So I did learn from the first book that I do want to provide even more value. Self-consciously, I don't know if I provided enough, but you know, it was my first book. You know, you learn, live and learn. So that's what I got planned for part two.
And now back to your regularly scheduled podcast. It's our open ballot. And this time our question was, what would you change about Xcode? We had so many responses to this question. You folks got some amazing ideas for how to improve Xcode. So I'm going to dive straight in with one of the hottest topics, plugins. Matt Diaz says, I'd love for Apple to introduce an officially supported plugin manager like Alcatraz used to be. Eric Strotman said, I would love Swiftlint that runs every time I save a file. And David Ocken and Luke Street both said, Swift Package Manager support. I have to admit, the current Xcode source editor extensions are very, very limited. You can't do very much with them at all, sadly. It would be fantastic to see an actual real ecosystem of plugins because, you know, you can never predict what folk are going to make. And it just opens up this whole area of Xcode getting better and better and better, not once a year, but all the time, as contributors across the world can add things to it.
Yeah, I just want to quickly echo what Eric Strotman said, is I would love to see a linter, you know, built in. I understand Apple might not want to, you know, dictate the style. You know, we as a community have come up with a standard style, but I think having a linter built in would be really helpful.
As for usability, Jack Mustacato says he wants better autocomplete like what the JetBrains IDEs have. Now, JetBrains app code and similar, they are very, very much more advanced in terms of TDD. And so you follow the more, you know, TDD-oriented practices. You write a failing test first, then write the code for it. And so when you write a failing test, you know, call a class that doesn't exist. It will do code completion for that class as you start typing it, even though it doesn't exist yet. It's very, very clever. It's designed in that direction. Neil Macy says, change the tab concept to represent your open files like every other IDE out there, rather than each tab basically being a window. And Chris Apps Grimberg says, I would like to see some kind of Xcode version on iPad Pro.
Yeah, I want to agree with Neil real quick about the open files, because whenever I use Sublime for my website, I'm like, wow, this makes sense. I like this. And like you said, every other IDE. And then I'm a fan of Xcode for the iPad Pro. Now, I understand you may not do, you know, hardcore coding on it, but somebody on Twitter brought this up, and I can't remember what his name was. But even just for like code review, or you just want to kind of skim through your code and reread it and just kind of like review things rather than, you know, hardcore coding. So my take on it is something is better than nothing.
Thomas Torbic asks for a dedicated delete derived data button. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think I saw someone, and I'm pretty sure this was fake, but somebody posted a picture of it on their... what's it called?
Oh, the touch bar. Yeah.
That just came across Twitter like yesterday or today, and I was like, is that real? I hope that's real.
I've just memorized the shortcut. It's like, what, Shift, Control, Alt, Command, K or something. My fingers know, my brain doesn't know it.
And is that really? I didn't know that shortcut existed.
It's Shift, Alt, Command, K, I think it is, from memory, but I've got to look at my actual fingers to know which buttons to press. And it basically completely zaps your build. I use that a heck of a lot. Moving on to UI stuff, Giuliano Alvarenga, Caleb Wells, and Richard Lowe all asked about having some sort of Sherlock-style app built in. We've talked about Sherlock in previous podcasts. This is a way to inspect and modify your views at runtime. We have another comment here asking to see the UI of a programmatically created view before running it, like in Android Studio. Now, I should say that IB is very, very old. You know, I was using Xcode before Xcode 4 when IB was a separate application. And they've merged that into Xcode now. They haven't really changed much in its style since then. They've moved the library slightly now in Xcode 10. But that's about the most big feature they've had for a long time.
So wait a minute. Are you telling me Xcode moved the library? Like, I haven't heard about that.
that's about the only feature change in Xcode 10's IB.
Oh, no, it's just, I think that's the biggest complaint everybody talks about. When I did my, like, what's new in Xcode, the comment section of just, why did they do that? What, you know, and I get asked all the time, where did the library go? So it's kind of a controversial change.
The Android Studio thing is particularly interesting because Android Studio does let you write in XML or dragging and dropping around in a UI editor, and they both stay in sync as you go. So you can do both, and that would be, I think, completely transformative for Interface Builder. And I do think if Apple ever do rethink their UI design, they might go in that direction. So you can hand edit your storyboard code much more easily, or preview it and do it using your UI. Plus, there's a comment from Eric Cricklow saying, merely looking at a storyboard shouldn't cause Xcode to mark it as dirty.
I thought they fixed this. I know what he was talking about, that as soon as you clicked on the file, you know, it would be a change in the file, but I thought they did a pretty good job of fixing that, because I haven't seen it since then.
They fix it all the time, and it still isn't really fixed. It still changes. And the thing is, the storyboard is just full of so much complete gibberish. Mm-hmm. You couldn't write that thing by hand. You wouldn't want to unless you hated somebody. So it's got to get better, quite frankly. There's another great response here from Jonas Kolb saying he really wants more extension points, especially multi-file access. And to clarify, what we get right now with a source editor extension is when you activate your extension, you will get the source code for the current file the user's looking at, plus their selection range. And you can modify that file you want to. But that's it. You get nothing about the rest of the project or configuration or similar. It's a real shame because Jonas has done some amazing work in the community. He did Xcode Gen, he did Beak, he did Mint, he did Swag Gen. He did all sorts of things to make the development environment of Swift developers much, much better. And, you know, I cannot even begin to imagine what he would do with a really great set of extension points to Xcode. There were some responses about testing. Magnus Jensen said, unit testing without the need to run on an iOS device or simulator. And Kasra said, built-in support for REST API testing.
Yeah, I like what Kasra is saying here. And you know, we've all probably used something similar. I use Postman. You know, I'm sure there's tons of different programs out there. And I know this does a little bit more than Postman does, but I really like the idea of having that API testing going in another tab so you can see things. I like that idea.
And if we could get unit testing without having to launch a simulator, it'd be huge. That is the slowest part by a long way. You know, a good unit test should take, I don't know, less than a tenth of a second, maybe a thousandth of a second on modern computers. They're extremely fast unit tests. But spinning up the simulator, installing the app, copying the Swift libraries, yada, 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 actually takes a substantial amount of time. It's sort of 2 or 3 seconds from a cold start, if not longer, which is a very long time. So if they could remove that and make it work in you know, Marzipan's environment or similar, it'd be huge performance wins.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about it. I hate it when that happens when I'm testing. It's a real pain, you know?
And finally, we have one here from Louis who says, make playgrounds more stable. And I have a fascinating fact for all listeners here. Sean, you might not know this as well. Apple has actually made their playgrounds 100% more stable over the last year.
I did not know that. That's a pretty impressive stat.
Yeah, they went from 0% stability to 0% stability. 100% more of zero is still zero.
I wasn't sure where we were going with this, so I was just going to say, well, it depends on what the original number was, but I didn't want to ruin it.
You knew what it was.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Swift Over Coffee, but as always, we want to leave you with something to think about, and that is the next open ballot. And it's a pretty interesting question. Is it time for Apple to move away from simultaneous annual releases of all their operating systems?
I think at this point, you've got to admit that the annual WWDC migration we do is a lot of hassle. I've actually booked my hotel room for next year already.
speak for yourself. I think it's pretty convenient, pretty easy. I don't have to go anywhere.
That's great for you. Yeah.
Everybody comes to me. So no, I hear you. It is definitely you know, a hassle for everybody else. Like I said, I'm not dreading the London trip. I'm super looking forward to it, but that 10-hour flight, not looking forward to that. But and again, that's going to wrap up the episode. We hope you had an amazing 2018, and we can't wait to see what you do in 2019. So tell all your friends to subscribe to Swift Over Coffee. I feel like it's a pretty darn good podcast, if I do say so myself. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter @SwiftOverCoffee. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye.